Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. It actually was. Hi, everybody. It's AJ here from the Cult Popture Podcast, and this episode was brought to you by our Patreon. It's just me here for the moment, introducing you to Volume 4 of our wonderful series of Patreon sample packs, where what you're going to hear in this episode is a couple of old episodes straight from the Patreon vault. So they were previously, you could only get them behind a paywall, but they've both existed. Both these episodes have been out for a couple of years now, so we're putting them on the main feed. And so what you're going to hear in this episode is one episode of our show on our cult member tier over on Patreon, called Film Franchise Follow-Ups, where we revisit a franchise that we've done already and look at something new, maybe a TV show spin-off or something like that. Or in the case of this sample pack today, you're going to hear our discussion on Toy Story 4, following on from the Toy Story trilogy episode that we did in 2018. After that, you'll hear an episode of generic_movie_podcast.exe, which is on our cult leader tier, where if you donate, I don't want to edit this, I'm just going to say, if you donate $10 a month, you get GMP. If you donate $5 a month, you get Film Franchise Follow-Ups. And the GMP episode is us talking about the movie Hairspray. Now, we'll get to them in just a second. But before we do, I do want to take this opportunity. We so rarely have it at the start of this sample pack episode, which we're doing, by the way, because Auckland is currently in lockdown. And Christchurch, I hope, is not too far away from also being in lockdown. And we wanted to have a break for our own mental health. So that's why you're getting a sample pack today. But I do just want to take this opportunity. If you're a longtime listener of Cult Popture, I want to implore you to do two things. Maybe you've already done them. So I'll add a third thing for if you have already done these. The first thing is I implore you to join our Discord server. There is a link to the Discord in the show notes. Click on that. If you've never used Discord before, it's sort of like a gigantic group chat that's compartmentalized into different rooms. So if you want to talk about current events, you can talk about that in one room. If you want to talk about memes, you can talk about that in another room. I really recommend you head over there if you haven't already, because it's a great place to get involved with the Cult Popture community, including myself and Richard, as well as all our wonderful listeners who we've been in contact with, and some of whom we've even made wonderful friendships with. All of whom, I should say. Up to people in the Discord, it's up to you to work out who I consider out of you to be a true friend. Doesn't that sound like the fun kind of mind games you'd like to be a part of? So why not join the Cult Popture Discord server today? The second thing I would like to implore you to do, if you haven't already, is, join the Patreon. It is the only real way that we get any kind of support, any kind of sustainability for what we do here at Cult Popture. And you can join, and for as little as $1 a month, you can have say in what the podcast does. You get the two podcasts you're about to hear. You get access to those two series on different tiers. That's the $5 tier and the $10 tier. The $1 tier, you get to suggest and vote on every second franchise we cover. And we've also recently changed up our $15 tier, which was called Cult Classics. It's now called Cult Elders. And what the Cult Elder tier allows you is you get a secret room on the aforementioned Discord where you get to discuss with others what you think of the franchise of the week, whatever that may be. So, for example, the next episode of Film Franchise Fortnite is going to be Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. So there'll be a Cult Elder channel over on our Discord, or if you join it and discuss Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, we will read out your, or not read out, but summarize and pull from the discussion that you guys have about the franchise in a new segment that's going to appear in every episode of Film Franchise Fortnights from now on, called Meeting of the Elders. So very exciting stuff is happening. So join the Discord if you want. Join the Patreon if you want. Otherwise, just enjoy these episodes. And the third thing I want you to do is something I haven't said in a while, is tell a couple of friends about this podcast. Go on. Tell a couple of friends, tell them there's this cool podcast from New Zealand and they talk about movies and they discuss Air Bud the same way other podcasts discuss Star Wars. Like, you know, get us out there, because we want more money. So enjoy the Patreon sample pack, starting off with the film franchise follow-ups episode about Toy Story 4.
All right, well, we're here today to talk about Toy Story 4, our second franchise to get two film franchise follow-ups.
And I would love to get, because we did the short films, that's right, and I would also love to one day watch at least a couple of episodes of Buzz Lightyear of Star Command an episode on that, because that shows such a cool little example of world building. But we're not talking about that at the moment.
No, we're not, we're so shut Toy the fuck Story up, 4. AJ. You don't have to. I'm sorry. It was your birthday the other day. It's still your birthday month. I can't be mean to you. Yeah, we're talking about Toy Story 4. Wow. So Toy Story 4 is the latest addition to the Toy Story franchise and the final addition in film form anyway. Ooh, might get to that later on. So it was directed by Josh Cooley in his feature film debut. We've got all our favorites from the Toy Story franchise returning. We don't need to say who they are. But this time, we're also joined by Tony Hale, who plays a new character called Forky, and Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, who play Ducky and Bunny, two stuffed toys. They got Christina Hendricks plays Gabby Gabby, who's the quasi-villain of the film. And then also Keanu Reeves plays Duke Kaboom, who is Canada's greatest stuntman. So, do we want to give any kind of spoiler-free thoughts first, or do we want to just say, hey, this is a spoiler podcast, we expect you to see Toy Story 4?
Yeah, I imagine this episode will have come out quite a while after Toy Story 4's release.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing everyone listening to this has probably seen it already. So let's just go.
There will be spoilers. Full spoiler discussion.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you can kiss my grits.
You can eat my shorts.
So, Toy Story 4, what's it about?
It is about the toys. They're living with Bonnie, who's their new owner. And Bonnie is about to start preschool. No, kindergarten? I don't know, something.
Yeah,
I know the American preschool unit.
She's going to school.
System works. And she's really nervous, and Woody wants to take care of her. But also, Woody is like her least favorite toy, very clearly. She doesn't ever want to play with him. He's always left in the closet. And so when she goes to kindergarten or whatever it is, he sneaks into her backpack just so he can keep an eye on her and make sure she's okay. And while she's there, he kind of sneaks out of the backpack and provides her with enough crafts to make what is supposed to be like a pencil case holder, but she ends up making a little spork friend with googly eyes. And because she has made a new toy, that toy comes to life, which one of the first things we found out about this film, and something that I deeply enjoyed, because it was kind of what we talked about when we covered Toy Story on Film Franchise Fortnights, is what makes a toy a toy. And I feel like, not to handbrake the plot synopsis, but this gives us somewhat of a step towards the answer, you know? Which is what? If a child believes you are a toy, you come to life?
Yeah, because there's also a chair that has a face.
True. Mm. And so, but the Forky comes to life, and he's the spork, but he believes he's trash, so he wants to commit suicide all the time by jumping in the trash can.
Committing suicide, it's just he feels more comfortable in the trash. It's like pulling a fish out of water, and it wants to keep getting back to the water.
And then Bonnie's family goes on a road trip, and she takes all the toys with her, including Forky, but Forky jumps out of the RV because he doesn't want to be toy, he wants to be trash, and Woody runs out to get him. It all sort of culminates where they all meet at a carnival. They all like try to get back together with their family at a carnival, where Forky gets kidnapped by a antique doll, and while trying to say, this is a very complicated plot.
You're going very far into the plot. Like when you were like, Woody jumps out of the bag, I was like, okay, all right, we're doing a play-by-play of the film.
If people saw it, like, say, half a month ago, this is a better reminder.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, and Woody finds Bo Peep at this carnival, who was, of course, missing from the third film, and they get together to try and save Forky and save the day. That's kind of
where we... Now, let's just talk about... So, obviously, this film had a lot to live up to. The Toy Story trilogy is... considered, you know, one of the greatest trilogies in history in terms of quality and consistency. And the third famously ends very...
finalistically.
Finalistically. Although, to be fair, they never actually said it was the final one. They were, like, on the press tour of the third one, they talked about doing a fourth one. So, a lot of people were not really on the side of this film. And what do you think has them on Tomatoes?
It's got like 98.
98%. So it's pretty much universally liked. It's is it the lowest rated film in the Toy Story franchise? I can't remember.
I think Toy Story 3 is also 98. I think it's 99, 100, 98, 98.
I think it's 100, 100, 98, 98 or something, isn't it?
I remember, maybe I'm wrong, but I remember Toy
Story 2. Yeah, it's 100, 100, 98,
98. Okay, sweet. All good.
Yeah. As,
but like, you know, that though when something's that different, like I don't count that as much of a general consensus as I would if it were 80 compared to 98.
Yeah, 100%.
Like Yeah.
So
poor choice to use 100%.
What did you think of the film?
I really liked it, man. It was basically, aside from a few like nitpicks which don't at all alter my opinion, if that makes sense. Like I'm too in love with it for the opinions, I do have to like change any big part. It was basically what I didn't know I wanted, I would say, in a fourth Toy Story movie. This is my like one line review that I think I will so when people ask me what I think of Toy Story movies in the future, I'll say this about it. Toy Story 3 was how to wrap up the community. Toy Story 4 is how to wrap up Woody as a character.
Yeah. No, that's good way of putting it.
I really like that about it, is that because one of the nitpicks that has come up about this film is that the OG crew have very little to do in it. Like Rex... Mr. Potato Head.
Because there's a thing about Mr. Potato Head, because the voice actor died a couple of years ago, and they're like, oh, they managed to use like old like recordings of him to finish the film. And it's like, I counted one line from him.
Yeah,
exactly. Hey, watch it, pal, which he says in almost every movie.
And so Slinky Dog, Rex, and Ham, and Mr. Potato Head, they have very little to do in the film, and it kind of more focuses on a new crop of characters. But I actually didn't mind that at all, because they had their conclusion in Toy Story 3.
Yeah,
they have found their new owner, and that was enough for everyone except Woody.
Yeah.
And so this is how to wrap up Woody's story.
But at the same time, like, I did kind of wonder, I was seesawing a bit in the film of like, on one hand, like, this is a great ending for Woody, but then on the other hand, it's like, is this always what he's wanted? I was trying to remember back to the films, like, I can't remember, like, you know, it was always about his kid. And I guess, like, this movie kind of introduces that, like, what if the world beyond having a kid is... you know, worth it.
Yeah, because, and I don't think we've mentioned this in the podcast yet, is that the film's conclusion is Woody leaves behind the toy community, his like Bonnie's toys, to go and be a lost toy and help toys find new owners.
Yeah, along with Ducky and Bunny and Bo Peep.
And Duke Kaboom.
Yeah. But it's a nice ending for Woody.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is funny that although this one is the one that they're saying is the last one, that kind of actually leaves more open to like new adventures, I thought. I mean, there is like mid-credit scenes of them getting like car because they're at a carnival, you know, getting all the prizes won so they can go home with kids. But it's you know, we could see these adventures of Woody more.
Yeah, I would like to see that. And look, man, I was like, we talked about how one of your big nitpicks with it, and feel free to explain it better than what I will briefly do now, as you said to me that you felt like the other films are a bit more epic and a bit more grand.
Yeah, and it's like I do get that it is like it's a lot more personal kind of story, but it's the same kind of thing I had a little bit in Infinity War, where it's like so the trailers for Infinity War, you have like, here's like the battle at the train station. You see some of the battle in Titan, and then you see like the big battle of Wakanda. And I was like, oh, I wonder what like what we haven't seen yet. And then with this, it's like, okay, we've seen the carnival in the trailers, we've seen the antique store in the trailers, and I was just kind of hoping for like a third location that we hadn't seen yet. Like obviously, Toy Story 3 has like the incinerator. Toy Story 2 has
the airport,
and then the first Toy Story has like kind of all of Sid's house, I guess. And chasing the moving truck. And so it's kind of like, I guess it subverted my expectations in that sense. But it kind of just took me a second to be like, okay, is this as far as the movie's going? And then to have to realize that rather than anticipate something else. And then, you know.
I think that's totally valid, but as I don't think it needs to go anywhere else. And I think because we've had all three other movies that have like cool set pieces like that, it's like,
yeah, and the set pieces,
it's not as much of a shame because it's like, well, we've had it three times, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Because like the big sort of like chase scene of the movie is just trying to get people to come back to where they already were.
Mm.
It's not like, oh, we have to get here before this. It's like, we just have to get them to turn around and come back.
Yeah.
One thing, my biggest sort of praise of this film, that's not like a complaint, it's just a thing that took me a second to come round to. My biggest sort of, one of my biggest pieces of praise for this film is it's the funniest Toy Story movie.
Yeah.
This movie's so funny. Like, Key and Peele, oh my God, the scene, I'm presuming, because we're going to spoilers, I'm presuming you've seen this if you're listening to this, when they describe how they're going to get the key off the old lady, and it's just them attacking her like three times, that is so funny. Yeah. And when it does the plush rush, and it's them like following her home, and then she's like in the bath and then lying in bed, and then Jordan Peele's character like rises above her, I was like, my sides actually hurt because I was laughing so hard at that. And there was a lot of times in this movie where I missed a line because the audience was laughing so much.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know that was in the trailer? I saw them attack the old lady in the trailer.
But like the fact that was done three times, and that the third one was so much, funnier. And then it's immediately like after that as well, like, how did you get the key? And then it cuts to them like, all right, what are we going to do? And then she just puts the key down in front of them. It's such a great like, it's like lazy storytelling in a way, but it's so funny. It's like making a really good joke out of like, you know, trying to not being able to think of a joke.
Mm. Yeah. What else? I thought Duke Kaboom was great.
All the new characters really shone in this movie. I thought Forky was great. Yeah. Forky's going to be a millennial fucking icon.
Yeah, exactly.
Spirit animal, because the whole time it's like, all right, we're going to go to this. He's like, I'm trash. And Tony Hale's fantastic. Tony Hale suits that so well.
Yeah, yeah. I think what I love how old this movie feels. Or at least how old Woody feels. Like, he's the character he's embodying. And Tom Hanks is like, you know how people complain that voice actors don't get cast in big budget cartoon movies as opposed to like celebrities for the star power? I feel like Tom Hanks is the perfect marriage of both of those things. He's like a legitimate real life celebrity, but he's also like a fantastic voice actor as well.
Yeah.
And that just comes through with Woody because he's such a aged character, especially in this. And I just, he brings such a warmth and grandpa-ness
to the role. Really lucked out with there, because, you know, they wanted, like, how they wanted Jim Carrey and Clint Eastwood and Chiller there. Or, but the we were talking about this the other day about how funny it is that Tim Allen and Tom Hanks are famous co-stars. Like, Tim Allen's only still talked about because of Buzz Lightyear, whereas Tom Hanks is still, like, one of the most beloved celebrities.
Which, do you think that's why Buzz is somewhat relegated to the sidelines in this film?
No, I think it's because it's Woody's story, as we said. Yeah. No, I don't think it's they made a conscious decision to be like, well, Tim Allen's not as famous anymore.
Well, not as famous. He's not as good of an actor. I'll say that, you know. So I wonder if that is part of it's probably not. But yeah, can we talk about the Buzz? What did you think of Buzz in this movie?
So Buzz's side plot, because Woody talks about his inner voice, like his conscience, and Buzz thinks that he means his, like, his voice box. And so Buzz keeps pressing his little voice box button, and it tells him to do silly things, and that's kind of like his plot for the movie. It does feel very much like it's like a textbook B plot. It's like,
it's a real good B plot, though.
It's fun and it's funny, and he doesn't really have, like, an arc, I guess. He kind of realizes by the end of it, I think, that it's like I meant his conscience. But it's not like he doesn't really, like, struggle or, you know, do much.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people, one of the biggest nitpicks I've seen people say about this movie, and everyone says the same thing about the nitpicks, which is what we said, that it's like, I didn't really mind, it's just something I noticed, that Buzz, it seems like Buzz is dumber than he was
in
previous movies. Like, he doesn't understand the concept of a conscience. Was like the first moment where I was like, oh, that's interesting that they'd do that. Because there is a way to that, like, Buzz could have sort of reach the same conclusion without him not knowing what a conscience is. Like, he could have made a joke about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, I like, because Disney's gotten a lot of flack for, and Pixar as well, I guess, for their twist villains. And we talked about this a little bit on, I think, the Toy Story episode, where we talked about, because Stinky Pete's a famous twist villain. Lotso, I said, I think isn't really a twist villain because he's introduced as kind, and then in his second scene, you see that he's sinister. Yeah. And so more of the movie is the characters don't know, but we do as the audience. In this one, we're told Christine Hendricks, Gabby, this, like, 1950s kind of doll, is the villain of the film. What she wants is, she has a broken voice box. So her, you know, when you pull the string, it doesn't make any noise. And all she wants is to be played with by this kid. And so she wants Woody's working voice box, and essentially taking away Woody's voice. And then eventually she gets it, and Woody's kind of fine with it, and then they are all good. So, like, there isn't really a villain. Like, she's like an antagonist for a lot of the film because she works against the, you know, desires of our leads. But then by the end of the film, they've made up pretty quickly, and Woody is definitely sympathetic to her plight once she explains it to him.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's they totally took on the criticism of always having a twist villain and changed it so that the twist is now that then there is no villain. A while ago, Tim Allen was like, oh, it was so hard to get through the recording lines for Toy Story 4 because it got so emotional.
Yeah.
He has like two lines which that could have applied to.
Once you kind of realize what's about to happen, you're like, oh, okay, this is the scene that they talked about crying through. And because, like, you didn't cry in this film, I didn't cry in it either.
I just don't cry.
I went with but I also didn't, I don't know, it didn't hit me as hard emotionally as the third one did.
But again, it's not, Toy Story has given me so much as a franchise that the latest one not delivering on everything the past ones have delivered on isn't as much of a, it doesn't bother me as much. It's more like,
yeah,
moving along a story, and for me this film is all about story arc, and I think that the the story arc they give Woody is so, like, it's such an inspiration. It's so good. And it's like, and I mentioned this in the Pixar Perception video I made about Monsters University, that and I mean, we've been talking about what's the best sequel, what's the best prequel on the podcast, on the Mother Show, and like, this is a great forequel, you know, like, yeah, and it's not that no other franchises hasn't done a good forequel, because Mission Impossible 4 is probably my favorite Mission Impossible.
Trick 4, yeah.
But it's very rare for a franchise to have four real good ones in a row, and four movies which I would collectively call four of the best movies ever made in a row.
Wow.
And so I think that is really cool. But you can also look at it as it's more like a TV show, because TV shows, you know, often have better episodes.
Have four
later
episodes
on.
Yeah.
But the revelation to make Woody's new story arc begin with, what do you do when you're not needed anymore, is like, oh, of course, because it's like, it hadn't really broached that, but that is a very real thing, that were toys sentient, they probably would worry about. Is,
well, but then that's brought up in the second and third films.
No, but that's more about being abandoned. This is when you're not the least favorite toy anymore, because Woody was Andy's favorite toy. Right. And so it's almost like Woody is getting a taste of what it's like to be one of Andy's least favorite toys.
Yeah.
And how, and what it actually does is it validates that role by being like, this doesn't make you less of a toy. This happens to a lot of people. And what, I mean, it's about finding your purpose, and it's about what Woody does with these new feelings, and what it resolves to is him. At first, it's him needing to get Forky home because that's all he has left to do, and then once he does that, he realizes that his new calling is to get toys to other owners, and so that they can have the magic that he's had.
Yeah,
and that's so beautiful. That's so wonderful.
More fun cast stuff. There's a bit when Woody's in the closet because he hasn't been chosen to be played with, and he talks to a bunch of like older toys. Did you recognize any of those voices?
Or did you see
the thing? So it was Mel Brooks as Maleficent Brooks.
Carol
Burnett as Cheryl Burnett. Betty White as Bitey White. And Carl Reiner as Carl Rhinoceros.
That's really funny.
Yeah, their names in the credits. And also Bill Hader played the carny at the carnival. Did you notice that?
Was that the one?
Yeah, with the headphones on.
Yeah,
Bill Hader. That's awesome. Bill Hader's like Pixar's Lucky Charm now. I found out.
Inside Out.
Monsters University, Finding Dory.
I don't know, is it Monsters University?
Well, I don't know what to say.
Now
that.
I do.
He's one of those, like, he just pops in there all the time now. He was in... Yeah, Finding Dory. I found out the other day because on Letterboxd I've got it, so like I can look at my stats, and I've seen more movies with Bill Hader than any other actor.
That's awesome.
That's such a strange thing. Like, second is Samuel Jackson, who makes sense because he's in everything. But yeah, that's really interesting, I thought.
I, Mr. Sunday Movies, who I don't mind saying on the Patreon, is very clearly an inspiration to me personally. He put out a video this past week about the cancelled original Toy Story 3, which we must have talked about in the film franchise Fortnights. Yeah. And he sort of went a bit more into detail with like concept art and stuff. And it got me thinking, like, there's so many good ideas in that. And I think the scraps of what Toy Story 3 is could potentially be a satisfying Toy Story 5. Maybe you kind of need Woody in it, but what I do like about it is that it's a way to make Buzz relevant again, because another YouTuber that I like is called Blame It On Jorge, and he does like those 60-second Simpson reviews and Simpsons histories and Simpsons mysteries.
He's been doing
a series for like 4 years called Pixar Perfect, where he ranks and discusses each Pixar movie. And one of the things he brought up when talking about one of the Toy Story sequels is how the Toy Story sequels always have to find something to give Buzz to do.
Yeah, right.
And so that's I like the idea of the cancelled Toy Story 3 being more Buzz centric, as a way to like make him relevant again in a way that feels less like a gimmick.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to do that film in like 2002 though. Like,
yeah.
If they made that, say they wait another 9 years and 2028, we get a film about these toys that came out 33 years ago are being recalled.
Yeah, we're so far beyond that now.
Yeah.
yeah, fair enough. Just thought I'd see what you thought about that. It's a good idea for a plot. Maybe it could be like a video game that's like a midquel or something like that. Yeah. That'd be cool, actually. That's my further follow-up.
Well, speaking of further follow-ups, there are actually further follow-ups planned.
Oh, cool.
So they've said, they've basically said this is the final one, but they've also kind of hinted at, whatever, don't rule out a fifth film. So a 10-episode short-form series called Forky Asks a Question will debut exclusively on Disney Plus. It's a launch title from November 12th, 2019. And a short film entitled Lamp Life will come out later in Disney Plus's first year, which is going to reveal Bo Peep's whereabouts between leaving and reuniting with Woody, and hopefully will explain how she got so thick. With two C's.
Yeah, no, those both sound like great ideas, and like the great thing about them is both of them are affordable actors for a smaller scale Toy Story thing.
Yeah.
One other thing I liked about Toy Story 4 is how we see, like, and I've talked about this when we on the last film franchise follow-ups for Toy Story when we talked about.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The short films is that I feel like there is an intentional direction toward exploring other sort of types of toys, because in the short films we got like the Happy Meal toys and we got the bath toys and stuff like that, and in this one we get carnival toys and we get antique toys as well.
It's
cool to see how that ecosystem works.
I thought you were gonna go with like Forky and stuff like that, but yeah, like different eras and like things are undeniably toys. But that's a good point. Also, it was cool seeing the Battlesauruses.
Yes, I was going to ask if you noticed that.
Yeah.
And also Battlesauruses, which are from Toy Story of Terror. Toy Story of the Time Forgot.
And the Combat Carl, voiced by Carl Weathers, is from Toy Story of Terror.
Which is great that it's in, like, and he's voiced by Carl Weathers in Toy Story 4.
Yeah, and because Combat Carl is also the toy that Sid blows up in the first Toy Story.
Oh, does he talk in that one?
Combat Carl. No, it's you don't see him. Well, you like just see his, like, because apparently, and Tom Hanks told a story about it, because they're like, oh, you got Carl Weathers in the film. And he's like, yeah, we needed, it was going to be like a G.I. Joe, but we couldn't get the rights to it, so we needed to come up with a name with it, if we were the name for it. And Tom Hanks was like, and I suggested Combat Carl. And then we got Carl Weathers.
That's a cool instance of continuity flowing upwards, which doesn't usually happen.
yeah,
you know, because a character from a short film exists in the same form in a feature film. Which the only other example I could think of that happening would be Boba Fett made his first appearance in the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah. But I feel like that was tease for his appearance. Yeah, and
that's true. I'm really interested in the world of different toys. Like, if Toy Story were a video game and you travel to each different like hub world has a different theme, you know, you'd have the bedroom tribe, you'd have the bath tribe, you'd have the McDonald's Happy Meal tribe, you'd have the carnival tribe and the antique tribe. I wonder what other tribes there are out there, and that could be a way to take it forward in the future.
Also, apparently the antique store we see as well, apparently that's like filled to the brim with references.
Yes.
Because there's the bottle cap. That's not in the antique store actually, but you see the grape soda bottle cap from Up.
Yep.
What else did you notice?
Did you notice you see Tin Toy?
Yes,
He opens the jukebox. Yeah, yeah. Tin toys in it. That was great. And of course the antique store is full of Pixar references. I read every single item in there as a reference to a past Pixar movie.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. There'll be so much on movie details when this is available on digital.
This movie is just
Pizza Planet truck. Did you notice that?
Where is it?
Bill Hader's character has it tattooed.
Ah, that's awesome.
It might be somewhere else, but yeah, like you see it very clearly.
That's awesome.
Because they talk about, I think they mentioned the tattoo, or it's quite funny.
So this movie, man, it's a new precedent. Like, this is so special,
Like, after we saw, I said to you, it's a worthy second best film of the year after Avengers Endgame.
Which to me is more about Avengers Endgame than Toy Story 4.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's like, I don't think any experience in my life will ever top seeing Avengers Endgame for the first time. Yeah.
So I'm just, as the two guys who know probably more about franchises than anyone else in the fucking world, Richard, I'm claiming it here on Patreon. this is one for the history books, you know? Like, this is unprecedented. I can't think of another franchise that has four. Maybe there's another franchise that has, like, where the fourth film is really good, slash, you know, on par with the others. I'm sure there are. Maybe there are franchises where where they have four good films in a row. But this is the only franchise I can think of where they have four good films in a row, and all of those films I would regard as, like, great. You know,
yeah. If Age of Ultron was the same quality as the other Avengers films, that would be one.
But yeah, but then if we're talking about what counts and what doesn't count,
yeah, exactly,
is setting it in a cinematic universe. What's the best Forquill? Yeah. It's Toy Story 4. That'd be a short podcast.
Yeah, and like if only we're discounting Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the best 22-quill?
Yeah, yeah.
It's either Avengers Endgame or like
Casino Royale, which is a pretty good one. Pretty good.
Or what's the 22nd Godzilla film?
Oh, I don't know. I bet it won't be better than Casino Royale or Endgame, though.
All right, should I actually like find out what it is?
All right, yeah, find out what it is, and then we can finish off this episode.
Godzilla versus Destoroyah.
Don't remember it.
That's the last one of the Heisei period.
Okay.
So it's the last film before Godzilla 98.
That was the Logan one.
The what one?
The one we were like, this is Godzilla's Logan.
Probably.
All right, everybody. This has been such a pleasure to talk about. And the great thing about film franchise follow-ups is we get to talk about films like Toy Story 4, which, you know, every other podcast in the world is doing, but it's like just for a select group of people who get to enjoy our perspectives on things. So thank you very much, Richard. Thank you very much to the audience.
And thank you for being here to talk to me.
All right.
I'm going to go play Crash Team Racing.
Me too. I've just unlocked Fake Crash.
I haven't finished it yet.
All right, everybody. See you later.
Bye.
All right, that was our Toy Story 4 film franchise follow-ups episode. I hope you enjoyed it. We're now going to go into an episode of generic_movie_podcast.exe where we discuss the movie Hairspray. And what's fun about this is that it is pretty dated. I think this episode came out in 2019. Both of these episodes came out in 2019. And in this one, I think Richard like literally says the date we record at one point. There's mention of Trump as president. There's mention of whether or not Jerry Stiller's still alive. Very funny stuff. Very funny stuff to listen to all these years later. But I hope you enjoy it. Check it out and let us know what you think. Well, you have
speaking
to,
of five stars, right? Speaking of five stars, we watched a little film. This is generic, but you guys know what this is. And this week we watched the movie Hairspray.
Good morning, Baltimore.
There's the flasher that lives next door. That's the only line I remembered for years since I saw this movie.
So, yeah, this is a 2007 film. We watched the 2007 one, not the 1988 one. Just
is it 88? I actually had no idea because the cover makes it look like it's from the 50s, but I was like, surely a movie from the 50s.
It's a throwback to like 62 Baltimore.
Right, yeah.
So it's deliberately, and because it's John Waters as well.
Who's the Flasher? He plays the Flasher.
Oh, does he? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
John Waters is great. This is like all of his films are like X-rated except PG, except Hairspray is PG.
I've seen Serial Mum and it's not, doesn't seem like that should be X-rated.
I don't know, maybe I think up until that point, maybe.
Right.
But yeah, so yeah, Serial Mum was his two films after this one.
Okay.
FYI.
Sweet.
Maybe we'll get that next
one. It is not very good. Jeremy made me watch it. Jeremy came over to our flat once, Richard, when you and I were living together, and he was like, oh, you haven't seen Serial Mum? We got to watch Serial Mum. And it was one of those cases where like Jeremy can get real enthusiastic, like how people do when they're like, oh, you have to see Silence of the Lambs, but about like movies that are completely unnotable. So I watched all of Serial Mum and I was like, this is a solid 5 out of 10. That I don't feel one way or the other about.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Mm.
But you know what I do feel strongly about?
What?
2007's Hairspray. So okay. I'd never seen this movie before.
Okay.
And you had, yeah?
I think so. I think I'd seen it when it came out like on DVD. I think my mum owns it on DVD actually. And right. I think I saw it but didn't like actively invest into it but did see the whole thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, what's it about?
It's set in the 60s in Baltimore.
Good morning, Baltimore.
And it's about a young, chubby teenager named Tracy Turnblad. And she really loves the show called Corny's. What's it called?
Oh, Jesus.
Corny's Corner. Corny's something.
Corny Collins Show.
The Corny Collins Show. And that's like a dancing variety show. And she's obsessed with it. I didn't realize this till later on, but a bunch of her classmates like star in it. And also, it's real interesting. And so she's like obsessed with it. And she becomes a member of the crew on the show. And it's from there, it has a larger conversation about race relations in the 60s, and that's actually probably more what it's about than
which is it's real funny because I had no idea. And so I just thought this was like a movie, oh, it's like, you know, love yourself kind of body positive sort of thing, and I kind of always wrote it off as just like a cheesy musical, a girl's film, essentially, you know. I was like, oh. And then I watched it the other night, and there's so the opening song, which is, or not the opening song, but when we're introduced to the Corny Collins Show, and it's like it's with the song The Nicest Kids in Town, and then like midway through the song, James Marsden, who's like leading it, is like a bunch of white kids, and I was like, oh, haha, like white kids. And then they're like, they mentioned like, and once a month there's Negro Day, and I was like, haha, like they're, you know, that's a fun little line.
That's a good
that
joke.
Yeah, that they're throwing in to about like 1960s, you know, the socio-political climate.
Yeah, it's a fun little satire of 1960s that can give us a giggle, and then we'll immediately forget about it because of course the movie's not going to be about that.
And then the movie's about that, and I was like, I watched the film, and because I was watching it with Jess, who doesn't like the film, and she, she'd seen it years ago and just wasn't really into it, but she fell asleep, and then I was like, the movie finished, I was like, I woke Jess up, and I was like, geez, Hairspray's real good.
Yeah.
I was like, why has no one told me that in the last 12 years since it came out?
Why has no one been
like, Richard, it's actually a good movie?
Yeah, it came out very much capitalizing on Zac Efron, because he'd just been in High School Musical, the first two High School Musicals. And I think that somehow, I can't remember the exact situations in which I ended up seeing it, as I said before, but I remember thinking, like, I remember really liking Zac Efron in it and being like, this is much better than Troy, who at the time, I, of course, was very anti High School Musical because I was a little boy. But yeah, no, I like it. I think it's real good. It had real positive reviews and stuff. And I think I think part of that's probably because it's a real fun movie if you're into musicals. But it's also, like, it does a real good job of being a very important voice on these kinds of things.
Yeah, because it's a satire and also has a message, which I guess satire does kind of by definition. Yeah. But, yeah, it's like...
Satire is parody with a message.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what did you think this got on Rotten Tomatoes?
I did look because I didn't think it mattered. It was like 94, wasn't it?
Oh, 91. Sorry.
It must have changed in the 2 days.
84 since. Audience score, so you've combined the two.
Yeah, and I think that's because it's a very fun movie.
Well, it is a very fun movie.
And as I said before, it's very fun and it does good with what it's saying.
And what do you think of the songs?
The only one I remembered, well, the only one I thought I remembered was Good Morning Baltimore, which I really like.
Which is the opening song.
The song at the end they sing, what's the song? You Can't Stop the Beat. I realized as I was listening to it, I was like, I thought this was from High School Musical. And like when we covered High School Musical, I just forgot that the song. Yeah. Like if you'd started singing You Can't Stop the Beat, I would have been like, yeah, it's a High School Musical song. And then forgot that it wasn't in the High School Musical trilogy when we watched it. So I really like that one. I really like I like basically all the songs, I'd say. They're either catchy or
those are the two that mainly stand out that I remember the names of.
Yeah.
And Hey Mama, Welcome to the 60s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I like the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice as well. That's a good song.
Yeah. But yeah, You Can't Stop the Beat's one of those funny things that I knew. And I'd forgotten it was in Hairspray as well.
Yeah.
And then when it started, I was like, oh, yeah, no, of course. Because I knew Good Morning Baltimore just because I like went to acting school. Yeah. And, you know, every girl at acting school just belts that out at one point. And, but yeah, like You Can't Stop the Beat was one of those songs that would get played at parties and everyone would be like, oh, shit, this is my jam. And like, you know, jam out to it. And I never... I never got it.
Yeah, but now you do.
But now, all these parties I missed out on.
If you could go back.
Would that this podcast were a time podcast.
Mm. Nice. I did think another, while we're on the topic of what's good about this film, I guess. The one thing I thought, and I'd be interested to hear if anyone, I don't know if any one of our patrons would know about this, but like... We talked a bit about the idea of a white savior film in something like Green Book, where it's like a story about the trials and tribulations of a black man, but don't worry everybody because there's a white man that learns not to be racist and it ends up being his story and how he saves the black man. I think Hairspray is a real good example of having a white protagonist in a story about race where she's not a white savior. You know, because it's Queen Latifah is in this film and she's very much the figurehead of the movement. And I feel like that Tracy has a lot of respect for her character and it's more about a white person learning and, you know, the ways of being tolerant and being empowering their brothers and sisters in a way that isn't them saving the day, you know. And I thought that I love the part when Tracy first gets on the Corny Collins show and they're like, what's your favorite part about the show or whatever, and she's like, Negro Day, I wish every day could be Negro Day. And it's like, that's such a good line, that's such a good way to show the type of character she is and you know that she's just very genuinely very excited and I also appreciated that most of the cast like agreed with her. it's only like is it Michelle Pfeiffer playing
Michelle
the
Pfeiffer
that she's the villain and doesn't agree, obviously. So yeah, those are some thoughts I had.
Those are good ones, man.
Thank you.
So do you know much about like who else has played the roles and stuff like that?
Nope. I have one question and maybe you can answer it. So one of them, I guess one of the main things that you might that this film is a standout for is that John Travolta plays Tracy's mum. So he dresses as a woman through the movie and plays Tracy's mum. And I wanna guess that like because traditionally Tracy's mum is played by a man and like on stage or in the remake and stuff. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, not Tracy, Edna.
I mean, Tracy's mum, Edna.
Yeah. Sorry. So in the original film, it was the drag queen Divine.
Okay.
Played Edna Turnblad, which is, you know, a regular John Waters collaborator. Mm-hmm. And then, the weird thing about this film is it's not really a remake of the first one. The original had a stage musical based on it, which mm-hmm. was then adapted for the screen with this film.
Right.
So it's an adaptation of a musical based on that film.
What an interesting life for an IP.
Because the original is not a musical.
Isn't it?
No, it's like it's about dance and stuff like that, but it's not like a musical. Wow.
That's so, like the main thing about it.
Yeah. Wow. That and John Travolta playing a woman.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah, so you had the original was Divine.
Yep.
And then when they did it on stage, they were like, there's only one person that can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that person actually won a Tony Award for Best Actor in a Musical. Mm-hmm. And that was Harvey Fierstein.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Isn't that perfect?
Yeah, that's really good. Nice. Yeah, cool.
Harvey Fierstein. I don't know. I fucked up doing the voice just then. You know how I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Can you do it?
No, I'm not going to try. Okay. No, who is Harvey? Harvey Fierstein. Remind me who Harvey Fierstein is.
And you know, in Mrs. Doubtfire?
Oh. A movie I haven't seen in...
Okay, wait,
years.
Let me find... Because he's been in heaps of stuff.
I'll just look him up.
He's the one who... Like, you'll know his voice, 100%.
Yeah.
He's Carl in The Simpsons, and he's so good in it.
He plays
not
Carl.
Not Carl as in Lenny and Carl. In, like, season 2, Homer gets an assistant called Carl.
Okay. Was Harvey Fierstein... Has he watched John Travolta? Is what I'm watching. All right, so they asked him if how he ranks John Travolta's performance as Edna in Hairspray, and he goes, "Oh, I've never seen it."
Yeah, he's got such a great voice, eh?
Yeah,
it's like it's deteriorated a bit, but yeah, when it was like this like smoky, breathy drag queen kind of voice, he's so good.
Yeah,
anyway, well, sorry about that. Hopefully,
I'll have edited it down so it was more cohesive than what it
sounded like. Okay, so, yeah, he originated the role of Edna on Broadway. And Jerry Stiller has a cameo on this film.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, he's a minor role. He's the original Christopher Walken in the original film.
Yeah, that makes sense. Very similar types of people. Christopher Walken and Jerry Stiller.
Yeah, and
is
Ricky
Jerry,
Lake.
Is Jerry Stiller still alive?
Yeah, barely.
Because I feel like I've seen two reports saying he's dead.
He's 91.
Wow.
Let's look at his personal life. Yeah, he had a very... he had a close call pretty recently, I think.
Mm.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. Yeah, Ricky Lake was the original... Tracy in the original, and she has a cameo as well.
Nice. What do you think of Nikki Blonsky as Tracy in this?
I think she's it was real interesting because I was watching Good Morning Baltimore. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to talk about how good she is.
Mm.
And then as the film came out, I was just like, as the film progressed, I was like, actually, her acting's not very good. But then anytime she was singing and acting, I was like, this is amazing.
Right.
And then when it goes back to just acting, I'm like,
Because. I know the name Nikki Blonsky, and Hairspray feels like it was a career launcher for her. But then I looked up to see what else she's been in, and the only other thing I recognized was Pupstar.
She's Lady Pawpaw.
Yeah. So she didn't really get much of a life out of this film, which is surprising.
No, she did a few roles that are like, fat girl is more of a personality than just being fat.
Yeah.
Like if you look up all their roles, she's like big girl.
Cause like Amanda Bynes is also in this movie and she already had a career by the time this movie came out, but then she like kind of sank that career and now she's kind of back already again. So
yeah, she's trying hard to get back. I wouldn't say she's back necessarily.
Yeah, actually that's a good point. What has Amanda Bynes done since her
Yeah, she's trying. There's so many articles that are like, she's back. But she hasn't really been anything.
No.
She went on hiatus from acting in 2010 to deal with personal issues.
Mm. Okay. Sweet.
Yeah, so let's see. Hasn't been anything since Easy A.
Do you think that John Travolta in this film, I thought he was real good and a real funny character. But then when he starts singing, he's just singing as John Travolta and not as Edna Turnblad. It was very distracting because the lines are often very about her as a character. I remember thinking that when I first saw it. But I mean, it's good. It's good to get John Travolta in the movie, I think, because he's...
But it's funny how he's kind of just doing Dr. Evil.
Yeah. Tracy Turnblad.
At the start of this, I said it was directed by Sean Levy. That's wrong. Sean Levy directed Big Fat Liar.
Yeah.
So it was directed by Adam Shankman.
Another Amanda Bynes film.
Yeah, that's where I got mixed up. Adam Shankman of Bedtime Stories. So he's directed... Oh, wait, I was going to say another Adam Sandler film, but...
This doesn't
happen. Man, I'm fucking all over the place today.
It's okay.
He directed What Men Want.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Well, he'd know.
God, I'm such a piece of shit.
Yeah. I'm waiting for you to go. I have nothing else to say.
Well, all right. Well, should we talk about sequels? Where to take this film?
Okay. Where's my sequel?
Yeah. So, there was apparently a Hairspray 2 in development. And on 2nd of June 2010, film bosses have scrapped plans to bring a movie musical Hairspray back for a sequel. John Waters was supposed to create a script for a follow-up with plans to bring Zac Efron back. And then John Waters said... They liked it. They paid me. That's the last I've heard of it. They asked me to write a treatment, but I'm so obsessed with it. I wrote every single thing that can happen to every character. It's different. You can't tell the same Hairspray story again. It's been told 3 times. And then it was confirmed that the sequel got dropped.
Yeah, because this is the type of film that I'm reminded of Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, of like a successful musical based on like a beloved stage show that doesn't have a sequel in itself, but then they just make one because they want money. And now would be a perfect time to revive Nikki Blonsky's career and Amanda Bynes' career, sure.
Yeah.
And bring us back
and Zac Efron's career.
A Hairspray 2, which is my idea. It's called Hairsprays.
Okay.
Yep. And now there's a competing show. It'd have to be set in real time. So now it's set in the 70s. And so now everyone's all about different hairstyles and and everyone sings about them. And that's my idea.
That's it. So the sequel would have been called Hairspray 2 White Lipstick, apparently.
White Lipstick. Interesting.
Yeah. So it would have been the 2013 straight to DVD sequel, which was set to release in theaters on August 31st, 2013.
That's not how
it's from
that
Hairspray
works.
Wiki. I love wikis, man.
Wikis are like this beautiful, like unreliable source of information. Remember those earbud sequels that like their only piece of information was available on the wiki?
Yeah, it was just some dude that wanted it to happen, so he wrote about it. So it would have been the story. We'll look at Tracy Turnblad as she enters the late 60s era of music, set against the Vietnam War and the British invasion.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so that's my sequel.
No, it isn't. Fuck, that's John Waters' sequel.
Damn it. I want a sequel set today.
Oh, shit. Okay. Keep going.
March 19th, 2019. And Trump is president.
Okay.
And Tracy Turnblad.
It's just set against that backdrop.
Yeah, and Trump's played by a woman.
Okay, good idea.
Kathy Bates.
Okay.
That's good casting.
She already did that for another politician, didn't she, on SNL?
Oh, yeah, that was Melissa McCarthy.
Nah, Kathy Bates played someone on SNL.
Let's have a look.
Would this Trump played by Kathy Bates sing a song?
Yeah.
What would she sing?
Hey, it's good morning,
Good morning,
Washington.
Washington. That's good content, dude. Shit.
This is good stuff. This is really good stuff.
Yeah.
Jeez. Actually, oh, Roseanne Barr should be a good
that's
Trump.
That's who it was. Who did she play?
James Comey.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I was thinking of. I get mixed up between Roseanne Barr and Kathy Bates. Nice. What about bug spray?
Oh, nice. Yep. A bug spray.
And it's only connected to Hairspray in the sense that it's also a musical, but it's about the bug spray industry.
No, like a bug's, it's the cast of A Bug's Life.
Oh.
Reading the script for Hairspray.
I love it. Yeah. And the main characters are like head lice.
Hey, now we're cooking with gas.
It's about
or Hairspray, which is also flammable.
It's about Tracy Turnblad's head lice. That's what the film's about.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. Good stuff.
All right. Okay. Hello.
All right. Okay. All right. Who's who behind the dude? That was the tagline.
Well, we may never know.
That's the head lice.
Cool. Well, did you have anything else that you thought about this series?
Oh, this series of one film. I'd quite like to go watch the original, eh?
I don't. If not, if it's not a musical.
Yeah,
that's
true.
The best thing about the film.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope this has given you some joy in your week. Thank you for your donations. And
good morning, Baltimore.
Yeah, good night, Baltimore.
Ah, very good.
All right.
Very good.
See you later, everybody. All right, and that was generic_movie_podcast.exe. I hope you enjoyed the sample pack, this little treat as to what you should expect if you join our Patreon, which you can, I haven't said this yet, but you can join our Patreon over at patreon.com/coldpopshow. There'll be a link in the show notes. Should have said that at the start. Anyway, that would be awesome if you could sign up if you wanted to. It'd be a great way to support us, but otherwise just support us by telling people about us, by joining the Discord, by engaging with the community. It's one of my favorite things ever is hearing from our listeners and discovering a new listener we maybe didn't know we had. It's such a rewarding feeling. If you enjoyed this episode as just a regular episode of the podcast, though, I would love to get you to support us in all the other ways. I'm going to stop plugging Facebook, but you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at ColtPopsha. You can also email us at ColtPopshaMedia@gmail.com if you are so inclined. And there's a whole bunch of places to support us and to follow us and like us, all the social media, so get on that. We're not going to do a post-credit scene for these Patreon sample packs, but we'll be back next week with Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.